The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
On the line now from Cork is Regina Sexton, who's a food historian in UCC.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Regina. How are you?
I'm good, Brendan. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, we've a bit of a delay, so we'll try and work around that. Now, look, St. Patrick's Day, as we were just saying there, coming up next week, and we will talk a bit about our national dish. But we just wanted to talk a little bit first, given that you're a food historian, about kitchen gadgets. And I suppose a lot of people have a few extra gadgets in the last year or so. But about the maybe a little kind of analytical breakdown of why people have gadgets and the messages they're trying to communicate and stuff through the gadgets in their kitchen. So you're going to break it down for us. I believe that, number one, a lot of gadgets are kind of for display, basically showing off.
Yeah, I think they are in many ways. I suppose, you know, we think of gadgets as being objects that are, you know, there to help us to kind of stand in for skills or to save time, you know. But I think, and, you know, I think they do a lot more than that, though, because even though they're sort of silent physical objects, I think they are loud statements of where we want to be with food, to display our relationship with food in many ways. So they're high symbolic objects, really.
The delay will come, but look, we'll try and work through it. What kind of gadgets, so for example, would be kind of status symbols right now?
I think at the moment you have things like, you know, there's been a big upsurge in the variety of coffee machines, for example, that are available. So that's one big one, you know. So and there, you know, you can buy coffee machines now that you could almost have to run a cafe from your kitchen in many ways.
Yeah.
And you have things like, I suppose, you know, beautiful objects then. And a lot of them, actually, the beauty of the object at the moment is projecting backwards. Like you have kind of retro examples, like beautiful Kenwood mixers that come in gorgeous pastel colours, like baby pinks and baby blues, you know. And these are objects that you don't put into your cupboard and hide them. These are objects that have a visual impact. So you want people to see them. And they're almost like conversation pieces, you know. They'll say, "I know about coffee," and all of the kind of the complexity of making a good cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. "I know about baking, and here's my beautiful Kenwood machine," and so on. So, yeah, they are high status symbols with big symbolic message to communicate, I think.
Yeah, and of course, it's also about saying to people, "I have very good taste." And you know, we think, "Oh, I'm not a cliche, I have good taste." But then when you look back at different times and different eras, even in Ireland, different gadgets that we now laugh at were the kind of height of sophistication at different times, weren't they?
Sure, of course they were. And I think, like, I was trying to think back, my first memory of a gadget was an egg slicer, a cooked egg slicer. And a bit before my time was the hostess trolley, you know, that the woman of the house would come out with this in a kind of a flourish, in announcing with her trolley all that she has inside it. And that was an interesting one, because that trolley was kind of saying, "Well, look, I have all of the stuff done and cooking," but it was kind of hiding in many ways the drudgery and the hours of preparation that went into making all the dishes that were inside the trolley. So that's another interesting one, I suppose. So, yeah, and that's another characteristic of the gadget, in that it has this allure because of its novelty and newness. But then you kind of say, well, after a while, you kind of say, well, you know, I've gone beyond that now. I've moved on from the object, and it loses that gloss, really. And a lot of the gadgets that we buy just end up in the back of the cupboard, or with things like the ice cream maker, for example. They just live in the freezer, and we've given up on them, really. We move on to something else.
Yeah, I suppose one
and
last
I suppose
thing.
That is kind of the heart of commercialism.
Yeah, that you always need something new. Before we move on to the national dish, these days there's a lot of gadgets around kind of, if you will, signalling that you are a healthy Gwyneth Paltrow style person, isn't there, and that kind of wellness lifestyle?
Sure. And I think there, that's the big line that we've seen emerging in recent times. You know, you have things like the spiralizers for making ribbons or spaghetti of vegetables above a kind of a grain based pasta, that kind of idea. All of the, you know, the whole world of water bottles. And then the other one, I suppose, that's enjoying popularity at the moment is the air dryer, whereby you can fry food without oil. And these are all your attachment to health. They're signifiers of the fact that you understand the connection between food and well-being and wellness.
You know what? I understand it enough to know that fried food needs to be fried and not done in air. But anyway, so the national dish, you are nominating the obvious one, bacon and cabbage. Probably it goes in and out a bit, doesn't it? I know like a deconstructed ones have come back in the last few years or whatever, but it, in a way, does it have a kind of an association with old Ireland and the dark chapters and poverty and stuff like that?
Asher, I think it does. It's the national dish, but it's the much maligned national dish. You know, we kind of like it. We love it, but we don't want to say we love it. We're kind of awkward about it, but then we do love it at the same time. And but I think, you know, as a national dish, it's got a great story behind it. And I think at a personal level, people, if you do want to go for that dish, people will love it. They love the taste of bacon with cabbage and floury potatoes. And I mean, it can be a really superlative, beautiful dish if it's done properly and if it's done well. And if you, you know, if you seek out really seasonal cabbage, beautiful floury potatoes and good quality bacon or even ham, a joint of ham if you want to. And, you know, there's a fantastic historic story behind it. And the other thing is that I think we're coming around to realising and identifying and actually promoting the fact that as an island, Ireland produces just fantastic ingredients. And, you know, we don't have to be flamboyantly sophisticated and trying to lean towards other perceived sophistications of cuisine. I mean, bacon and cabbage is really good. It's really lovely.
Absolutely. Sorry. I keep cutting you off. I have given us a bacon and cabbage recipe to put up on the website today, and we will put that up, but we won't talk through the whole thing now. But I suppose just, you know what I'll do? I'm going to ask you a couple of things together so that you can then just talk me through them rather than me butting in on you. So firstly, just maybe give us 20 seconds on the steeping and the washing and the stuff of the bacon. Secondly, then, do you cook the cabbage in it? And then thirdly, I see you have parsley sauce or mustard sauce. I would have said it has to be parsley sauce.
Sure. Okay. So depends. I suppose it depends on who's producing your cut of bacon or ham. It can be quite salty from the curing process. So what you need to do, it's a good idea to soak it overnight in water, put it in the fridge or keep it in a cold place. Take it out of that water the next day, put it into the cold water, bring it to the boil. When you see the scum, take off the scum. Take the bacon or the ham out of the water, rinse it off, begin again. So try to do that with the cooking water as much as you can until it goes clear. So that would take all of that, you know, overwhelmingly salty taste out of it. The cabbage is an interesting one because as Irish people, we tend to kind of annihilate it. So put it into the cooking water and the cabbage for maybe 20, 25 minutes towards the end. Or you could just quick fry it on the pan. Or you could cook it in a very small quantity of the bacon cooking water for 4 or 5 minutes. So that will give you, okay, just to maintain somewhat of the crispness of the cabbage. And then, as you say, the classic serving accompaniment is parsley sauce. But I just went for the mustard one because it introduces a different kind of kick to kind of balance the salt of the bacon. But it's a personal
Regina
choice.
Sextons,
both are really
that's
good.
That's absolute notions there now, classic notions. All right, listen, we'll put that up on the website, rte.ie/Brendan. And thank you very much, Regina Sexton, food historian at UCC.